You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Ashley Tepper.
And I'm Joe Iconis.
On today's episode of the Album Podcast, we're going to be talking about Helen Sharp, an epic manifesto as written by Joe Iconis and sung to the heights by the great Lorinda Lisitsa.
The song is inspired by the Robert Zemeckis film Death Becomes Her and my own jealousy and bitterness at those around me.
Well said.
It's the truth. Check out the podcast. Here's some more dirt.
That she's accomplished all my dreams. Then some more, then some more, then some more, then some more.
Helen Sharp?
Yeah.
What a song.
Thanks. I wrote this song the summer of 2017. Mm-hmm. And like many of the songs on the album, I was feeling very frustrated and annoyed with my career and my place in the American musical theater. And I wanted to write a song that was about jealousy, and because I was feeling feelings of jealousy at other people who I perceived as having the kind of success that I wanted and still want. And it's something that is it's a constant thing in my life, looking at other people and feeling like I wish I had that. And I think that it's a constant thing in most artists' life. We just like rarely talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to write a song that was about that and the anger that comes with that. And the sense of like not wanting to turn bitter, you know? And because I just having a career in the arts, I've seen so many people go to the dark place, you know? For good reason, because it's really, really hard to do this, and especially if you're, you know, I think if you're anyone, but if you're like an actor for sure, and you know, I feel it as a writer or anyone, you it's really easy to get beaten down, especially if you're someone who's a lifer who's, you know, been doing it for so long and wants to keep doing it. It's really easy to get discouraged, and with all of those, you know, years of disappointments and rejections, it adds up, and you have to consciously try not to become bitter, to try not to become someone who's just angry at the world and moving about life with nothing but you know, jealousy and anger and bad feelings. And so that's what the song is about.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is another one where you perform this most often, but has anyone mm-hmm. else performed it?
No one else has ever performed it besides me until now.
Wow.
Yeah, Lorinda is the first person ever to perform it who is not me.
And Lorinda never did it in a concert?
No.
Wow. I have a memory of her doing it in a concert that I've conjured in my brain.
You've conjured it up, yeah. She's never done it. And it's a crazy song. It really is. Like it's huge. It's like fire and brimstone. Like it is like a big, like belching, furious song. And you know, should say that like many others on the album, inspired by a film, it's inspired by Death Becomes Her. And something I always loved about Death Becomes Her, in addition to how like sort of lurid and kind of trashy, classy the movie is, it's a movie that's about, it's about jealousy, mm-hmm. in a way that many pieces of art aren't. And the way that that movie dramatizes it is by using, you know, like plastic surgery and zombies and like the Living Dead in Beverly Hills and all that. But I always thought it, the relationship between Madeline Ashton and Helen Sharp. Madeline Ashton is the Meryl Streep character, and Helen Sharp is the Goldie Hawn character. I always thought that relationship was so interesting and really kind of like weirdly moving, and so it felt like a great vessel with which to write something about jealousy,
yeah.
and about me as a writer feeling resentment and feeling like, you know, this longing and of wishing I had what, you know, insert X person's name here has. And so even though it's written from the point of view of Helen Sharp, which is why it's called Helen Sharp, even though her name isn't in the song, it is very much something that feels really personal to me. This is another one where I feel like this is as autobiographical as any song on the album, even though it's using the situations of Death Becomes Her to tell the story. So because of that, I did it for the first time when I did a solo show the summer of 2017. And then I've done it a few times since. And it's just one that like I connect with so deeply that it just kind of makes sense, I think, for me to sing it. However, in the back of my mind, I always thought if I had someone else sing this song, it would be Lorinda Lisitsa. Mm-hmm. Lorinda is an actor who I have known since NYU. I first saw her in like thesis readings of other people's shows and was so like, who is this woman? There's no one like her in the history of like, they broke the mold. They broke mm-hmm. the mold. She's not a type. She doesn't fit in a box. The box is Lorinda Lisitsa. She is her own box. And she was in this thesis musical. I wrote two thesis musicals at NYU, The Black Suits, and then the show called Plastic, which had words by the great Robert Maddock, and I co-wrote the music with Reza Jacobs. And Lorinda played this totally unhinged character in that musical, and I've been working with her ever since. And she is so good at playing unstable people.
Yeah.
She is Mrs. Claus in the Christmas show mm-hmm. every single year, the drunk Mrs. Claus. She is a fearless actor. She will do absolutely anything.
The first time I ever saw her was in Triumph of Baby, which is mm-hmm. another show you wrote with Robert Maddock. And like, it's a tour de force for Lorinda.
Yeah.
And it's incredible, like what she did in that show.
Yeah.
And she was in Rewrite, of course.
Yeah, yeah. In Rewrite, yeah, as... Miss Marzipan, and others. And she just, you know, her again, like so many people on this album, like her voice is so gorgeous, and she's such a great interpreter of song. So she's someone who could just stand at a microphone and sing standards, and you as an audience member would have a perfectly transcendent experience. Mm-hmm. Like, she's so great at it. And it's like almost cruel that she is so great at that and also is such an incredible, fearless actor and also so funny, like so truly funny. She can just do so many things so well. And I think that then when you can harness that and put it all together, you get performances like her performance of Helen Sharp, which is, what she's doing technically is really stunning. Like, her actual vocal performance is really hard and really gorgeous. But it's really the fearlessness of it that is, it's just otherworldly.
She's definitely like a fearless performer on stage, where I think people get this in the Christmas show, because obviously mm-hmm. that role is written as so Lorinda can like excel at that thing that she excels at. But I just feel like, yeah, it's exciting to see Lorinda in anything, because you don't know how far she's going to like take a line or a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, and the answer is like farther than you ever thought possible.
Yeah.
Like, there's just like, there's no, like, she, you know, some actors or performers they're like a little bit like below zero, you know, and I tend to like a performer who makes big choices and who's bold and has personality and is like firing on all cylinders from the top. And I less respond to performers who like give what I would call whisper performances, where you're just like, what are you saying? And Lorinda is just like, every choice is like a cannon,
yeah.
You know, and in the best way. But what's great though, and like, and you hear it on this song, and I'm really proud that I'm involved with this song because I think it's an amazing performance. She's huge and so in your face, and it's like almost punk rock how huge she gets on this tune. But then there's also these moments where she's so quiet and so intimate, and she sounds so, like, so wounded, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that, like, the huge
juxtaposition, yeah.
Yeah, like, those, that juxtaposition that I think is something that makes her so special, you know, where she, like, I've always said that I want to do a production of Carrie with Lorinda and Lauren Marcus, where they swap roles as Carrie and Mrs. White, like, every night. Because I think they both have that thing of being able to be like huge and crazy in your face, and then be so good at being this kind of fragile, wounded soul. And Lorinda just you know, truly, truly breaks my heart on this track. And the orchestration of the track is something that it's one of my favorite orchestrations on the album, and Charlie did such an incredible job with it, and the players did such an incredible job. And this is like as big as any song, and it's, you know, full like strings and brass, and it just sounds massive. It sounds like, you know, like film score, huge. And the fact that Lorinda not only carves out a space for herself in that massive wall of sound, but matches it and sometimes goes over it is really, really incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud to be associated with it. And you know, the obsessive return to Madeline, it's, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's something that I find myself doing, and I try so hard to not, where it's like, all of the things that I am unhappy about with my life, whether it's professional or otherwise, I find myself putting on other people, you know, where it's mm-hmm. like, and I think it's something that, I think it's a natural thing, because I see other people do it, where it's like, oh, I didn't get this thing I wanted, or people treated me in a certain way. They're not treating that person a certain way. And that person has everything I want. And it's so hard to not, you know, corral all of your issues and all of your disappointments and then put them on someone else and aim your anger at another human being. And so I try really hard not to, but I still do. And I think that that really is like, it's like that aspect of jealousy that I think yeah. is what the song is about. And it's like, something I'm proud of in the song is I think I did an okay job of expressing this, and something that I know Lorinda did an okay job of expressing it is like this idea of really trying hard to not be like that. You know, it's not just recognizing it and being like, this is how it is. It's like desperately trying to pull yourself away from it, but you just can't.
Yeah.
Like, you just absolutely cannot. And even, you know, at the end of the song, you know, when she says that, you know, the bitterness becomes me, it's just, you know, she's like sort of, you know, succumbing to it and owning it and being like, well, this is what it is, and this is who I am. Even with that ownership, she still has, you know, Madeline still is making her crazy.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, and this is another song where I think that it could just go on forever. It ends because the song ends, but it could just keep going on, and she could keep finding new reasons to know that Madeline is somewhere getting the thing. Madeline is somewhere being more bitter than she is. Mm-hmm. And everyone else knows that Madeline is more bitter than she is, and everybody's talking about it. And it could just go on forever. Which is also why at the, you know, at the very end of the track, after everything stopped, there's one little Madeline, like right before it's over. And it's like really that. It's this idea of like, it could just keep going forever and ever and ever.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
In the timeline of things, you know, this song, as you said, you wrote in 2017. Mm-hmm. You know, if things had happened in a different order with Be More Chill, like, who knows if this song would exist? You know, it was like right when everyone was like loving it on the internet and kids were like, why haven't I seen this show? It's my favorite show. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't happened other than the Two River production, which, you know, happened and then nothing happened with it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that this song, while about many things, not just about Be More Chill, as you've talked about, exists in the 2017 part of the timeline. I don't know. I just don't know if it would have been in the same way.
I don't think it would have. I genuinely don't think it would have. It was written in such a specific moment, and every time I hear it or I perform it, I'm taken back to that moment, and you know, and I literally wrote it. I was on Long Island in my parents' house, and I wrote it on the piano that I played growing up, and I think that's part of it too. It's like, the song is like, it's like kind of waltzy, you know, and it almost sounds like a waltz like a kid would play. And I don't think I did that intentionally, but there is something that I think is like, you know, my fingers were touching these are the keys that I literally learned how to play piano on, and played for years and would play like, you know, medleys from Phantom of the Opera and Little Shop of Horrors and all these things. And it's like thinking about then, you know, 30 plus years later, like my same fingers playing the same keys. And what I'm playing is like this song, you know, which is complicated.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you were in a horror movie, I feel like any song you wrote on your piano in your childhood home would start to sound like Miss Saigon or Little Shop. Like you wouldn't actually be able to write.
Right. I just like couldn't move my fingers from it. I do have to shout out one more thing about Lorinda's amazing performance on at the end of the bridge. The bridge. I want it to be its own thing. So there's lines in it that I think feel true to my life and experience and hopefully others that aren't literally from Death Becomes Her. And then there are lines that very specifically reference you know, Death Becomes Her. Like, you know, this idea of completely eliminating and the you know, and the cats that Helen lives with. But at the end of the bridge, when she says, and you pull a tub of icing off the shelf, which is something that happens in Death Becomes Her, Lorinda's doing a total Goldie Hawn impression there. If you listen to it, it's very amazing. And it feels kind of Easter egg-y that you wouldn't necessarily notice if you weren't, you know, listening with an ear towards Goldie Hawn impressions, but it kind of is there, and I think it's very brilliant.
That's related to my final question about Helen Sharp, which is, do you, when you're collaborating with actors on these songs that are inspired by films, are you ever like, hey, you should make sure you've seen this movie, or have you seen this movie? Like, do you think in every case where people have sung these songs, they even know the plot of the movies?
No, I actively don't. And a lot of times when I've written these songs and I send them to people, I won't even talk about the movie, because truly all of the songs that I've written that are inspired by by movies. I want you to never have had to have seen the movie in order to understand the song. The idea is always that the song is its own thing. It lives in its own world. And if you happen to know the movie and you happen to remember it enough and you can spot the direct references and all that, great. I think it will only, you know, enhance your enjoyment of the tune. But the goal is that it has nothing to do with that. And so with any of these songs, and especially with this, it's never about, like, you know, trying to recreate someone's performance or trying to recreate, you know, an accent or a character or something from the movie. It's its own thing that sits outside of the film. And so, yeah, so it's so funny. That's always the last... I just don't even think of it when I do these songs. And you know, and with Lorinda, like, we, you know, we rehearsed it and then in the studio we had tons of time. And there was never a moment where she was like, do you want me to say this like in the movie or anything? And even that the Goldie Hawn moment, Goldie Hawn never does the Goldie Hawn thing, you know, in Death Becomes Her. Yeah. It's like a, you know, it's truly like an Easter egg. But yeah, it's always its own beast. And the character is always their own character, sort of divorced from the piece of art that gave birth to them.
Helen Sharp.
Hey, thanks so much for listening or watching to my podcast. Do me a favor and go to wherever you just listen to or watch this thing and subscribe or like or give us a great rating or review, and then head to bpn.fm/album to find out even more information about this podcast, more ways to watch, more ways to listen, and check out my album. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Album Podcast is executive produced by Liz Armstrong, produced by Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Kim Garris, and the rest of the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Be sure to visit bpn.fm/album for both audio and video versions of this podcast, and to listen to Album.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.